Welcome and thank you for being here, Alex or Alejandra. I will go with Alejandra because I really love the exoticness of the name. But yeah, firstly, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I really like your podcast. I listened to a few episodes and it's really interesting. I love it. I love how you're bringing together stories from different immigrants and how the experience is so diverse.
Yeah, it's amazing. And, you know, for me, when I started out, I wanted to understand the stories and the background. But through every person that I've spoken to, what I've realized is how much they have this bigger mission and how their story has really helped contribute to that. And it wasn't something that I intended to do. I just thought, oh, it'd be cool to understand, you know, how they moved from one place to another and how they found it. But especially with you, and that's why I'm really excited about this. I've listened to your podcast and I've heard you speak on Clubhouse. And only recently we've been in touch, but I already feel I really resonate with what you say. And so it'll be really interesting to understand how you became this person. So before we do jump into that, I'd love to go back to the early days and where life for you began.
That will be, you know, I had an interesting experience a couple of weeks ago. I was, because now I'm doing interviews in my podcast as well as just telling stories, because I think it's also very important to not just focus on the Elon Musks or the Malalas, but also people who are doing things today, who are in the beginning stages, who are taking those first steps. And they also have so many valuable lessons. And I interviewed somebody called Dali Rivera, who is an anti-bullying educator, who's also an immigrant, just by coincidence. And then she interviewed me about my podcast and the work that I do. And she kept telling me, like, your story is so interesting and so unique, but it feels weird to me because to me, it's just my life.
Yeah.
And I keep forgetting that not everybody has moved countries four times, that not everybody started their journey traveling so often or had it be such a part of her family history for so long. So, yeah. So where do you want to start?
I mean, you tell me.
Early days is a broad term, so.
Yeah, that's true. I would love to go right back to the beginning from as early as you remember in terms of your childhood and growing up and what your sort of family environment was like.
Well, my family environment was really fun. I got to grow up with really fun parents and always knowing that I came from two cultures. So my parents met when my father was living in Honduras doing his engineering degree there. And he met my mom. They fell madly in love. And as a 19 and 21 year old, they got married. And my mom moved from Honduras to Ecuador to be with my dad. And yeah, 30 odd years later, they're still the two most in love people I've ever met.
Wow.
And making me feel uncomfortable by how in love they are with one another. And that has sustained them through their entire journey. Like, my first move was when I was 15. And we left Ecuador to move to Mexico because of my dad's job. And then 3 years later, we moved to Germany. And then my parents eventually left Germany 4 years later. I stayed longer and eventually became a German citizen. And then when I became a German citizen, the first thing I did was move to the Netherlands.
Wow. And that's amazing that you've said how in love they are. And I love to hear that. Was that something, because I know that Central Americans and Latin Americans, they are very open about feelings and emotions. And I'm British, so, you know, everyone is more open than us. But is that something that was common amongst your parents' generation at the time, that they do really display this love and affection for each other?
No, it's not.
Okay.
It's not common at all. Like, my parents, for example, my earliest memory, like, Ecuador is a driving country. You drive everywhere. And I remember that little things, like when my daddy's driving, he would put his hand on the, I don't know what you call it. I don't drive. I don't know how to drive. So I don't know what you call the thing to change gears in the car.
The gear stick.
Yeah, the gear stick. So he would put his hand on the gear stick and my mom would hold hands with him. And the entire time they were holding hands. It's really, really cute. Really, really annoying. And when they weren't doing it, it's because they were, I don't know, arguing about who forgot to take the trash out or something like that. Something really silly. And then that really marked how I see love, how I see these expressions of love. So when I was in the car with, for example, my aunts or my uncles or something, and they were not doing that, it was immediately weird for me.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's those little ways, or for example, they have this whistling way to whistle at each other. They can be in separate rooms in the house. My dad will whistle something. My mom answers with a whistle. Then he whistles back. Then she answers with, they have their little language, and it's very, very cute. And all those things made it so when we were in different countries, those things always remained. Those, no matter where we were, my parents kept having those little rituals with each other that taught me that everything was okay, that everything was fine. For example, our first Christmas in Germany. So we arrived in Germany on December 15th. It was completely different from Mexico. It was minus 15 degrees. A lot of snow. We didn't know that in Germany, grocery stores close like around the 22nd and they don't open until after Christmas.
Right.
In Latin America, they're open until like 8 o'clock of the 24th because you like last minute shopping. Germans don't do that. Germans plan. So it was that Christmas we had to go to a gas station and we had pizza for Christmas dinner. And
no way.
Yeah. And it sounds really sad, but it was really enjoyable because it was my parents and my sisters and we were just talking and having this really nice, intimate moment with just the five of us. And I think that is something that has sustained us, and just seeing my parents being so in love and making us feel, my sisters and me, always so safe and in this environment that we took with us in every single country we were.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I'd love to know, did you see how that translated into the way you built relationships with, you know, your friends when you were young, and especially moving to a new country and having to build new relationships there? Did you find those values translated into being very open and loving even to new people that you met?
I think so. I think there is this thing that my parents were always telling me, like, why are your friends always so weird? Why is
right.
you have that? They used to say that you have a talent to find weird people. And I think that it didn't come from that I am looking for them, that they feel pulled to me. And then another friend told me, and my best friend, Greg, he has a life full of conflict and he hasn't had the easiest journey in life. And I asked him, I said, do you think I pulled weird people in? That I just pulled weird people in? And he's like, no, to me, it's that I know that I cannot shock you. You make me feel very safe. When I'm around you, I feel like I can just say things and that you're not going to reject me. You're not going to judge me. You're not going to be any kind of way about what I'm saying. And you allow me to be myself. And then I realized that's how I felt in my house growing up. I mean, of course, when I was a teenager, I felt awkward and I didn't belong. Like I had that. I'm not going to say that I had the most idyllic childhood. I had like growing pains like everybody does. But it was the thing that I always felt safe. And I think that as I grew up and as I went to new places, I always had that feeling safe.
Yeah. So you mentioned about going through troublehoods during your teenage years.
Yeah.
Talk me through what these were.
Well, my teenage years were living in Mexico, and I can honestly say I was a nightmare teenager. I was a nightmare. Every time I look at my parents, I think, like, how did you not slap me? I don't understand this. I don't understand the level of patience they had. Like, in retrospect, so being, like, 28, and I think about it, and I thought...
I love the honesty, by the way. I love the honesty.
It's true. Like, my younger sister is 12 years younger than me. So I am 28, she's 16 now, and I keep thinking the things that I was doing when I was your age, I don't understand how, A, I'm still alive, B, how my parents did not slap me across the face, and C, how didn't I wreck my life? And yeah, like when we moved to Mexico, we moved to a really, really small town. And
which town was this, by the way?
Córdoba in Veracruz.
Okay, yeah, I haven't been there. I went to... Is that in the north?
No, it's... You know how Mexico is like this little boot?
Yeah.
Yeah, so here. Like, if the boot is here, like this, the tip is like Yucatan and Cancun and everything. It's like in the center of the belly of the boot.
Okay, because I've been to Palenque.
Oh, Palenque's really nice.
Really nice, yeah.
Yeah.
That's the closest I probably have been to it. Let's just chuck that in my little bit of culture from Mexico. But no, carry on.
So when I moved there, it was a completely different culture that I had experienced before. And I like to say that I had a really long childhood. Like when my friends were 12, 13 in Ecuador, they were already thinking about having boyfriends and so on. And I wasn't ready to talk to a boy when I was 13, 14. Like my childhood extended more. And I'm very happy that it was that way. And then when I was 15, 16, I moved to Mexico. That's when you start having boyfriends and stuff like that. And I had terrible taste. I had terrible taste. In retrospect, damn it. But yeah, and then because it was a small town, there was nothing to do. Everybody had their own car. And there was this bar that had a drive-thru. So we would get these liter glasses, which was like orange juice and vodka, and just drive around drinking that. And in retrospect, I think that's insane. That's a not good thing to do. But there I was as a teenager doing it. In retrospect, how am I still alive? I was in a car accident because I got in a car with a drunk driver. It's all those things. Wow. And I wonder why.
Do you think that's more common in a place where there isn't as many other things to do? So the kind of default is, let's just meet up and drink.
Yeah, I think so. I think it also comes from boredom. Like that's a conversation that I actually had with my dad, I think last year, that I am always living, and I think it comes from being an immigrant, I always have this idea in the back of my head of how lucky I am. Because when I was born, my dad was freshly graduated from university. He was just starting his first full-time job in the coffee industry in the city where I grew up. And I kept thinking that by that time I was living in Mexico, and then 2 years ago I got this thought in the back of my head that the day that I was born, there was probably another little girl born in the same general hospital, in the same public hospital. My parents, when I was born, they showed up at my mom had a C-section. They showed up at the hospital at 1 a.m. to get the operation at 6 a.m. because they knew that they couldn't afford the full 2 days, because the hospital charged by full 2 days. And they were very conscious of that.
Oh, wow.
And my parents have always been very careful with their money, very smart. All the things that they have has come from hard work, from making those tough choices and knowing how to teach us those tough choices. So the thought that I have in the back of my head is that in the same hospital, in a very similar situation with very young parents, a little girl was born and she has a life that's completely different from mine. She doesn't speak four languages. She doesn't have a chance to get a bachelor's degree. She doesn't have a chance to freelance. She doesn't live in Europe. All because she didn't get as lucky as I got to be raised the way that I was raised. And I think that comes from being an immigrant, from knowing that there are other realities, from not just seeing them on TV, I cannot say that I experienced poverty. I was very blessed to not experience poverty, but from knowing that it's the situation other people have.
That's an amazing mindset. Yeah, I've never even thought about it in that way. You know, you always compare yourself to peers or someone that you look up to, or, you know, sometimes in an egotistical way, someone in the same field as you that you think you're better than. But when you really draw it back to, like you say, someone who has entered the world at the same time, right? So in that way you're similar, but with completely different circumstances, and that way you're different. And then it comes down to, right, we enter the world at the same time, but how am I going to make use of the circumstances I've been given?
Exactly.
And be grateful.
Exactly. It's like, how dare I not use all the privilege that I had to help somebody, to make the world a better place for them? And that's also the thing that I keep going back to Elon Musk. It's like, I'm not Elon Musk. I'm not going to bring free internet to the world. But if one thing that I make, or one product that I help design, or one business that I help create creates two jobs or three jobs, or maybe the product that I make helps somebody in any way, that's a debt. So I enter the world with a lot of privilege. That means that I also have a lot of debt to do something better, to support somebody, to not just be, my journey is for me. My journey is not for me. My journey is to make my parents proud. My journey is to make the world a better place. My journey is to use all the skills that I learned that I got really lucky to learn, and to put them to better use for somebody else.
It's amazing that you say that, because one of my favorite quotes is, when you are lazy, you are ultimately disrespecting everyone that has faith in your abilities. And I love that quote, because there's so much depth to that. You know, obviously everyone knows laziness is, I don't want to say bad, but laziness is the inferior to productivity, right? That's generally known. But when you view it in the way of, sure, if I'm lazy, I'm letting myself down. But more than that, there's people out there who see value and potential in me. And by being lazy, I'm disrespecting them by saying that, well, I don't even want to live up to what you know I can achieve.
Yeah. I was talking to my sister the other day, and we were talking about the difference between having and not having. Mm. That if somebody invites you to their house, because so in Ecuador you have maids. If you're of a higher social, like upper middle class, you have a maid that goes to your house. She cleans for you, she cooks for you, and everything. And my parents would never let my sisters or me ever see them as servants. They were like, no, they're not your servants. You say please and thank you. Mm. If you need some, you don't yell at them from across the room. You go to them. They're doing a job here. And you respect their workspace. They're working. And you're not better than them in any way. You're not, just because they're here to work, you respect their space. And you respect the fact that they're here to work. And at least in my house, they always got treated very well. To give you an example, we had one maid in Mexico, and she had a sister. And the sister couldn't arrange childcare for her son. So that boy was confined to the maid's quarters, which is usually a room that's 2x3, and all day. And when my mom heard this, she was shocked, and she said, it's across the street. It's your nephew. Bring him over here. Mm. And the maid is like, what? It's like, bring him over here. He can chill in our house. You're here. You can watch over him. And that boy will arrive, and who is from a lower socioeconomic class. And my mom was like, has he had lunch? Give him an orange. Make him some lunch. My daughter is upstairs. They can play together. He can go outside and play with our dog. That's perfectly fine. It's perfectly okay. And we were shocked by the fact that the mother worked for another family across the street from us, and they had three boys. And we were like, aren't they playing together? What's wrong? Why is this class difference? Why are we just claiming that we're better than our people? And
yeah,
we didn't learn that. My parents would not never let us think that we were better than somebody else just because we got lucky enough to have more.
Yeah, that's powerful. And do you think that comes from the journey itself? So when you have to go through an immigration experience, whether or not you're doing it because you've had to or because you choose to, either way, the commonality is you're moving to a place where you are ultimately, in a lot of times, starting again.
Yeah.
And so there is that, I don't want to call it a struggle necessarily, but there are those hurdles you have to get through in integrating and finding people who you can relate to and finding people who can help you to find your place, right? And your identity.
Of course.
Do you feel that plays into it?
Of course. To give you an example, I had for university last year, I had to do a project about creating a sense of belonging in the city hall. And my classmates who have not had an immigrant experience, they were thinking like, we need to use tech. We need to use... one of them had this idea that was to getting drones that would deliver documents from the city hall to somebody's house, and then taking the documents back from the house to the city hall and all those things. And I thought like, okay, I focused on people who have communication struggles, because the first time that I arrived in the city hall, even though I'm a person with a higher education and I speak four languages and I am an educated person that can make herself understood, I don't speak Dutch. So they couldn't understand me. And it was frustrating for me. And I felt like I didn't belong in that space because I couldn't communicate properly. So I decided to focus on that.
Wow. Yeah.
And then also thinking that when I was living in Ecuador, in Guayaquil, we live in citadels, which has like these guarded communities with walls all around. And I remember there was one called Los Ceibos, and you had tennis courts, a very beautiful park, a pool, a wall, and then a hill where people were living in poverty, in houses made of zinc or made of whatever they could find and so on. And that image has been stuck in my head always. Mm. It's like, why are we designing for the ones to have the tennis courts and leaving forgotten the rest that are struggling? So in my project, I decided to focus on the ones that were going to struggle instead of focusing on the ones that just want the comfort. And that comes from feeling that way, from feeling that I didn't belong in that space just because I couldn't speak the language. So I cannot imagine somebody that comes from a traumatic migration, which is like the refugee situation, or having had to leave their country because of home violence. I don't know why people have to leave. So it came from that, from having that awareness that came from the fact that I have lived in different countries and experienced people from different situations.
Yeah, that's powerful. And I'm so glad that you have this opportunity to share these kind of ways of thinking, because I think, especially for the listeners, it's the idea of being really appreciative and grateful for whatever it is that you have, right? There's this thing of when you're striving to be the best, there's always someone out there that's better than you. But in the other way, it's, you know, when you're feeling low or incapable or the world is against you, the likelihood is there is someone out there who is worse off. So, you know, and it's gratitude. It's not a new concept. But for you, this kind of mindset that you have, which is amazing, do you think that was always in you? Or do you think it is through the things you've seen and the experiences you've been through that have shaped this vision and way of thinking?
I think that it came from a lot before. So I think it translated also from my mom's immigration journey, because my mom also immigrated and her father also was a migrant. My grandfather was originally from Peru, and he went to university, met my grandmother in Honduras and decided to stay there. And even my great grandmother on my grandmother's side, also the same, she left her country to be with my great grandfather. So it was always a thing. Those migrations because of love. They fell in love with somebody and then they migrated. And my mom comes from a small town in Honduras, and she always made us aware from that. It's like, you have these things, be grateful that you have them. And then when with my immigrant experience, then it just made this abstract concept real. Making this idea of being appreciative and grateful into, it is actually something like I can't imagine. Like, it's, let me put it this way. I think it was like 6 years ago. My parents were living in Ecuador and I went to visit them. There was around the summer. That's when the whales, the gray whales, go to Ecuador to have their babies. And I needed to go. I needed to go. I had always wanted to see it. I needed to go. I needed to experience that. So my family takes me. It was my parents, my younger sister, and my cousin. And we go in this little boat that we found somebody that could take us. We go in this little boat. He knew where. They all triangulate, all the tour guides, to know where the whales are, to make sure that you see them. And I had read about it. I had seen YouTube videos. But I couldn't imagine how massive a whale was until it was right next to it on this boat. It's suddenly, it's not only in your head, it's in front of you. And I think that's what it did for me, for not just knowing the stories from my family, but actually experiencing them myself. And it made these abstracts a reality. And one thing that I want to make clear, I think also this idea of be grateful because others have it worse off, I think that's also very damaging, because then that means that you cannot be sad because somebody else has it worse. You can also not be happy because somebody else has it better. But I think being an immigrant gives you a little bit of perspective, that you can say, I'm going to feel bad about what's happening to me for 10 minutes. But then after a while, I need to get a grip of reality and be like, what I'm going to do next.
Yeah.
I have the privilege of being able to have a next step of having the tools. So feel bad, let it be sucky, whatever is happening, but then move forward, because you owe it to all those who cannot do anything to move forward.
Yeah, I love that. And the thing I really love about having interviews and guests on the podcast is for my ability to learn through what people say. And what I've really taken from that is the idea of not being detached from these emotions, because it's natural to feel that. And it's also nice to feel those emotions, but then kind of using that energy, and like you say, for whatever time period you need to kind of process that emotion, but then transforming that energy into then helping you for the next step. So whether it is being happy for someone and being like, right, I'm going to use that joy to see how I can get to that level, or that sadness and be like, right, I'm going to use that for the gratefulness to then take the next step and not just kind of dwell on that.
Exactly.
And then let it fade. That's amazing. I love that thought. And that's definitely something that I'm going to look to try and implement more. And so transitioning to how you know, you mentioned these projects that you're working on. And if I'm not mistaken, in terms of your professional career, you actually started off in a tech IT corporation.
Yeah.
I'd love to know how you fell into that space, but then you really transitioned out of that into freelancing. So what was that process like and why did you do it?
Yeah, so how I fell in that job is really funny, actually. I fell into that job because of Tinder.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Was not expecting that.
That's the thing, that when people go like, Tinder sucks, and I'm like, I cannot batch Tinder. I found my job technically through Tinder, so... Yeah, so when I'm doing right now my BA, but I already have a technical degree in graphic design. When I was living in Germany, living in Latin America, the idea of doing art or design was not possible. It was like, I'm going to starve or I'm going to spend the rest of my life making wedding invitations. I don't want that. So I was supposed, in my mind, I thought I was always going to engineering. And then when I moved to Germany, Germany doesn't recognize any foreign high school degrees. You have to repeat high school.
Okay.
And I failed miserably there. I was studying the wrong thing. I was not interested. So I failed miserably. And then I moved from Hamburg back home with my parents. And I was really down. I was really down on myself and really depressed. And my sister told me, hey, we're in Germany now. At our age, kids don't live with their parents anymore. They live on their own. So how about you and I, we find an apartment and we do this. And I said, okay. I thought I have nothing going for me. I'm going to do it. So we left my parents' house and we moved. My parents were living in a suburb of a town called Lübeck. And we moved to the center of Lübeck. And that's where my parents said, okay, great. We'll pay for the rent, but you guys have to cover everything else. And they still gave us a stipend. Again, I'm very lucky that my parents do very well for themselves, but I still wanted to make my own money. So I started working as a waitress, as a juice bar. I had like 17 jobs and I loved it. I loved working and being of service and providing for myself. And we happened to move across the street from a design school. And I figured I'm going to do this for a year. While I figure out my next move, I'm just going to do this. And I never left. And it just so happened that it was the thing that I wanted to do and that I was in a country where I could do it, where I could do a poster and that poster could be appreciated and sustained and was not just going to be a side thought. It was like the thing that I was making. And then I had a teacher who introduced infographics, the idea of making infographics. And I loved making information understood for people because if I tell somebody that they should save 20% of their money, but this person doesn't really understand what percentages are because they haven't had that level of education. How can I make this understood to them? That made me like infographics, the idea of making something complex, understandable for somebody who has not been as lucky as I am. And through one thing and the other, I was one day swiping on Tinder, la, 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 and I find this guy that he's like really cute. We start talking and I said, what are you doing? He's like, I'm doing my master's in Hamburg and also working for this company called Statista. And I need to Google if these things actually exist to make sure that he's not crazy. And I found, wow, Statista. Oh, that drink, they do data. Oh, cool. They do infographics. How cool. Oh, they're hiring.
Amazing.
So I applied for a job. They happened to be looking for a Spanish speaking infographics designer. And I apply and I get a job there.
Wow,
and
LinkedIn really has its work cut out, I think.
Exactly.
LinkedIn needs to fix up.
LinkedIn needs to have a dating service. They need to make it easier. And I moved to Hamburg. And yeah, I was there for 2 years. I was there for 2 years. And the first thing that I did was go to the immigration office. By then, I was on a student visa. I say student because it was like I got really lucky with the immigration officer that I got because when I told her that I was going to go to design school is technically not a university. So technically it wasn't a student visa, but this person liked me. I think she liked me. I brought her cookies every time that I saw her.
Perfect.
And she was like, okay, what do you want to do? I'm like, I want to do this. It's like, okay, let me give me a second. And she started pulling all these regulations books and being like, okay, this applies to you. This, I'm going to highlight this. I'm going to photocopy it. Do you want to work? And I'm like, I would love to continue working. It's like, okay, then I need this book here. Okay, this applies to you. This doesn't apply to you. And she collaged a visa for me.
Amazing.
And then when I got my job, she told me, okay, work visa, perfect. I need your contract. I'm going to change it. You're also eligible for a passport now, for a German citizenship. Would you like that? And I thought, wow, is that really possible? And my parents were not living in Ecuador by then. And my dad was coming to Germany for a business trip. So, and every time he was like in Germany for business, we met up, my sister and I, we would go to wherever he was and have breakfast or something. And I told him, Dad, I got this thing. Should I do it? And he's like, do it. Do it right now. Do it. You get that passport. You need it. And I'm like, what if they want me to give up one of my, because I already had two nationalities. What if they want me to give one up? My dad is like, you do it. You do it. If they want you to burn it in that moment, you burn it. You need this password. This is like a golden ticket. You need it. So after 8 months of worrying and calling and answering questions and taking tests, I got my German passport. And suddenly I thought, okay, I like working in Statista. I really like, I have friends here. It's a very good company. But there isn't a place for me to go. Mm. It's this job for the next until I want to leave. And there wasn't any place for me to grow anymore. And so I started looking for another job. And I thought, I'm not up to par. And I don't know exactly what I'm going to do. And I thought, okay, I'm European now. I can technically move anywhere that I want. So I started looking for different places to go. I was looking at Belgium, Spain, France. And my parents said, hey, the Netherlands also, check it out. Maybe it's cool. And that school here had the hardest application procedure, and that just called to me. It wasn't just like, yeah, pay us and you can come over. You need an interview, an application, a portfolio, a homework task. And I thought, okay, I'm going to try here. And when I got in, I figured, okay, I'm moving to the Netherlands. And I remember my coworkers, they were like, you're just going to pick up and leave? I'm like, yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. And this is what I love. It's one of the things that I've come back to a few times in previous episodes, which is one common trait I see amongst people who have this immigrant journey or immigrant experience is your ability to be able to take risks. And I mean calculated risks still.
Yeah.
But just that people who haven't don't understand, not for everyone, you know, not to generalize, but exactly what you've said, right? You've been through the process of moving from Ecuador to Europe. And so you know that firstly, it's possible that you are able to do it. You are able to shift from one location to another and create a life for yourself again. That's hopefully a step up, right? You know,
yeah.
And you're able to do it. And so I love hearing that side of it, because it's something that I'm hoping people get inspired by who haven't done it before, to be like, okay, Alejandra's done it and it is possible, so maybe I should be a bit more confident that I can go through this experience and it can take me to places that I may not have been able to if I didn't take that risk.
Exactly. And I know, like, one of my coworkers in the office, like the one that was the most shocked, she has lived in the same apartment for 7 years. She has lived in the same little town for her entire life. So to her, leave that place, it's not a thing that she would do. It's inconceivable. But for me, it was more, I've done it before and I know that I'll survive it and I will know what comes next and it's perfectly fine. And I think that gave me a lot of understanding for people's journeys as well. So my boyfriend, he moved here to the Netherlands 2 years ago because to help his brother open a company and start a business and so on. And at times I noticed that he was really down on himself and he wouldn't tell me why. And I said, like, tell me. After pushing, he told me and he says, I feel really guilty. And I asked him why. He says, because I am really homesick and I don't think it's fair to you because I love you and because I'm very happy with you, but I still feel very homesick. And he was scared of telling me. He thought that I would like pick that up as he doesn't love me, he doesn't care. And I'm like, I get it. I get that you can be in a place and be happy there and still miss your home and still miss your family and still want to be and have that split. I understand what it's like to live with that split.
And so then did he move back home?
No, he's still here. He's still here and he's going through his immigrant experience himself. And he went home for Christmas and then he came back and he's like, it's similar because I'm leaving here, but I am also looking forward to being in the Netherlands with you.
Yeah.
And it's that thing that you can love multiple things, and you can have love for your home country and love from every place that you have lived, but also want to be somewhere else. It's that your home is not only a physical place, it's a feeling. And that's, I think, something that I got from my mom. So I don't feel the need to decorate, for example. I don't. I'm not wired that way. But my mom does. But I think that comes from the fact that she made every place feel like home for me. That right. It didn't matter if we were having Christmas with food that we bought from a gas station, or if we were having a beautifully decorated house. It was about the feeling that I had. And then when I was in Germany, in Hamburg, living alone, and I hadn't seen my parents in like a year, I would feel that homesickness, and then just go to the kitchen and hadn't made tortillas the same way that I saw my mom doing them my entire life.
Yeah.
And just make myself a stack and eat them with cheese, like watching a movie. And that made me feel home. It wasn't the fact that I was in an apartment. It was the thing that I was doing that connected me to the thing that I saw her doing my entire life.
See, I find this really interesting, what you've brought up. For you, you know, you talk about home very clearly. Do you feel the longer that you stay in the Netherlands or in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and when you get to a point where you say, if you end up being in Netherlands or Europe for at least as long as you were back home, or even twice as long,
mm-hmm.
do you think you would ever start to consider that home, or will home always be Ecuador?
Honestly, I don't feel like Ecuador is my home anymore.
Okay.
I feel very disconnected from it. In a way, I see people that say, I want to live in the town where we grew up and being very happy there and want to build our family there and so on. I don't feel that way about it because home should be a place that allows you to be yourself, where you feel comfortable and you feel safe. And I wouldn't feel safe there. I wouldn't have the same freedoms that I have here. But if I go to my grandma's house in Ecuador, the second I enter that house, it's my home, because I'm with somebody who loves me and I can do things and I can be myself in that space. So Ecuador doesn't feel like home anymore. Honduras doesn't feel like home anymore. Germany doesn't feel like home anymore. It's more like who I am with.
Mm.
And if I am on by myself, what can I do to make that space feel like home? So
yeah,
so right now it's this space right now, because my parents are, I'm visiting my parents today. So I'm doing this for my parents' house. And yeah, it's just like, we had breakfast. That's a thing that we do. We have breakfast and we talk and then we look up stuff and then we are joking and having fun. That's home. That moment, that activity, it's home.
So that's going to wrap up part one of the conversation. And I thought to put a break in there because I feel what Alejandra said there was a great insight to end on. So if you didn't get a chance to fully absorb what she was saying, then you can go back a few minutes and see what your answer to my question may have been if you were in her situation. Don't fret, the second part of this conversation will be out this Friday. So if you haven't already subscribed, then this will be the best way to make sure that you don't miss it. I love some of the fresh perspectives that she gave on how she was able to identify the privileges that she was born into and how this helped her to identify her passion to do good things for good people. Share some of your own views. Let me know what you think about the points discussed. You can find both of our contact details in the show notes. Please do share the episode if you have friends and family who you think would love it. It may just be what they need to hear. We'll be back soon with part two, so until then, have a great week.